Big Google news today. Google announces its Android Wear project. They're also working on a YouTube for kids. And Google kissed and made up with Viacom after a seven-year battle. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Tuesday, March 18th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android carrier products are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day in conversation with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Mitch Wagner, the West Coast Bureau Chief of Light Reading. Welcome, Mitch.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Jason. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here.
We're very glad to have you, and we're going to jump right into some breaking news. Google Senior VP Sundar Pichai announced this morning on a blog post a new project called Android Wear, which he said is Android extended to wearables. Pichai said Google is working with companies that will make smartwatches based on Android that will ship this year. The watches will ship this year. These companies include Asus, HTC, LG, Motorola, Samsung, and even Fossil. Moments after Google's announcement this morning, LG announced a smartwatch called the G-Watch, which Engadget says may ship next quarter, and Motorola announced this morning a new smartwatch called the Moto 360. With us to talk about this story is Killian Bell, who writes for Cult of Android, among other sites. Welcome, Killian.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, we knew Google was working on a smartwatch with LG and a wearables platform and all that, but what do we learn in Pichai's announcement this morning?
Well, we learned that this is how Android for the smartwatch is done properly. We've already seen some Android-powered smartwatches from the likes of Samsung, and there was a small company called iWatch that made one a while ago. And this kind of highlights just how badly they executed that vision of Android on a smartwatch. This is how you bring Google Now to the wrist and how you do it properly. The promo video that Google put out today, it's so elegant the way all of it works for just a few simple swipes, and it puts everything on your wrist precisely when you need it. We all know how big Google Now has been on the smartphone, and this just puts it right on your wrist.
Well, the video looks elegant from the sense that it's very Google Now centric, and to the point where it makes me wonder whether that's what it is. It's Google Now. Not a platform where developers can build apps that run on the device. Maybe it's just a Google Now thing and developers will simply be creating cards or something like that. But what wasn't elegant was the wristwatch. Some of the watches that they show in the video are just gigantic. They're exactly the thing that made smartwatches fail in the past. It looks like a big blocky square thing lashed to the wrist, and it's some, you know, it's a form factor that's kind of, you know, yesterday's failed platform. What do you think about that?
Well, I think I didn't really get much of a chance to see the Moto 360. I was on the call when Motorola announced it, but I'm just taking a look at some of the pictures now, yeah. And I think that kind of goes against that a bit. It's a really, really nice looking device. And when you compare it to something like the Galaxy Gear, it's quite the opposite.
You're absolutely right about that. Now, just for those who are listening rather than watching, Google's video that accompanied Sundar Pichai's blog post showed a variety of watches. Some of them were, as I described, big, blocky, square things that look very unnatural on the wrist. And others were, as Killian described, especially the Moto 360 watch, which is round. It looks, when it's not running the sort of Google software interface, can look exactly like a traditional, elegant, I mean, it's a very beautiful watch. And again, it's round. It kind of sticks up above the wrist a bit, but it but it is round and pleasant. I would certainly wear it. So hopefully that's the case. And, you know, it has a round touchscreen.
That is fascinating to me. Yeah. Even though it makes perfect sense because watches just often, at least watches that aren't screens, are round.
Yeah.
I wonder how that, and forgive me for because I haven't really read into this too much, and I doubt there's much details or information at this point, but I wonder how that scales easily for developers to be able to write apps that scale to round versus square, because that's just something that I haven't thought of before. That's got to be kind of a challenge from a development standpoint.
Absolutely. And Mitch, have you ever seen a device with a round touchscreen before?
I never have. It really strikes me as a major engineering challenge. I do see a bigger picture here, though, which is, you know, I already have a computer in my pocket. Why do I need one on my wrist? That's not an original thought to me. It was an essay I read that was speculating about what Apple might be doing in wearables last week.
I can answer that for you, Mitch.
Okay.
At least with my own theory. My own theory is that with wearable computing, you really get it when you do it. It's kind of like the iPad. When everybody described the iPad before it shipped, everybody thought, well, who needs that? A low-powered, underpowered tablet. I already have a phone in my pocket. What do I need an iPad for? But once you use an iPad, you're like, wow, this is really cool. You know, I really could use this for lots of things. It was mostly the feeling that it gives you when you use it. It feels good to use. And I have the feeling that these wearables, and I certainly have the feeling when I use Google Glass sometimes, the feeling that it gives you of having information right there, it's a different relationship with information. It's a different relationship with the internet. It's a different relationship with communicating with the people you care about or people you know in business or whatever. And so the big advantage of wearables, at least in the early days, is going to be how it makes you feel. It feels really good to do that, and it changes your behavior because of how it feels. At least that's my theory. What do you think, Killian? Are you a booster of wearable computing?
Yeah, definitely. I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said you don't know you need it until you try it. I've been using a Galaxy Gear for the past few weeks, I wasn't really interested in it until Samsung sent me one to test. And like you said, until you've got the notifications on your wrist and you can read text messages while you're having a meal in a restaurant, you don't want to be rude and pull out your phone. But when you've got it on your wrist and it's right there, it flips it around. You don't think you'll need it because you've got the smartphone, but then in some ways you think, well, why do I need to read my text messages on my smartphone anymore? They're right there on my wrist, and until I need to reply to them, I don't need to get my phone out of my pocket.
Exactly. And the best case scenario, I think, for all of this is for Google to handle the hard parts of this, for Google to handle the round interface for anybody who wants a round interface. And remember, the smartwatches, as Sundar Pichai pointed out, is just the beginning. Their platform is for all wearables, presumably not Google Glass, but for wearables in general. Sundar Pichai recently specified a smart jacket. So not only are these devices likely to have weird-shaped screens, like round screens, but they're also likely to have no screen and use only a voice interface. And some may not have a voice interface at all. They may be mostly sensor-based or whatever. So hopefully, if Google does this right, if they really want to knock this out of the park, they'll handle all the hard stuff. They'll handle the integration of apps coming from the phone and then being displayed through Google Now, being interacted with through the voice interface of Google Now. And we've already seen some indication that that's the case. I think it was last year or 2 years ago or something like that. We saw information showing up around their Android at Home functionality. Killian, you write for Cult of Android. I also write for Cult of Android. And I wrote a piece for that blog about this, where they actually showed home automation details that were associated with Google Now cards. So there's apparently Google Now is going to be the big interface for, I would guess, Google's whole Internet of Things, which includes, you know, home automation, it includes wearable computing, it includes the sensors that both of those areas of technology will use. So again, Google is not beyond screwing this up, though. They very well could come out with a platform, an SDK, and all the rest that is difficult to write for, that's off-putting. And so we'll see how that goes. But they certainly have a huge challenge. Now, Killian, this, you know, we mentioned the Google Now-centric aspect of this, and certainly the video, the promotional video, was very Google Now-centric. Do you have any indication whether that's it for app developers? They have to write the app for the phone, and then the information pops up in Google Now? Or is there any indication that there's actually going to be the ability to write apps that are downloaded to the device and running on the device?
That's going to be the interesting bit for me, because Google said that it's going to be pushing out an SDK this week for Android Wear, but there doesn't appear to be an app drawer like you have on an Android smartphone. There's nowhere to store apps. It all looks like it's very much integrated into Google now. So it'll be interesting to see when those first third-party services come along, it'll be interesting to see how they run on Android Wear.
It's also interesting, Mitch, that Sundar Pichai said that this will enable multi-screen interface so that the smartwatches, for example, and probably other wearable devices, will be used for controlling a phone and presumably also televisions and stuff like that. So that sounds pretty cool to me. I'd love to be able to control my TV with a watch. I'd love to be able to start playing music with a watch that plays over there, either on the phone or on a PC or on a TV or something like
that. Control your Chromecast for your watch.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be
cool?
I'd
use that every day.
So is that a compelling interface, Mitch? What do you think about the future of this multi-screen vision that Pichai hinted at here?
It seems candidly to be even less compelling than the text message interface, because if I'm listening to music or watching TV, I'm probably in a position where it's even more convenient for me to get out my phone or my tablet. I do think wearable computing in general has a future. I just think it's going to be a tough sell with a watch. I think we might see a finger ring, a ring, be more popular.
Yeah.
Just a little thing to serve as a proximity sensor for authentication, and maybe it'll vibrate when you have a text message.
And maybe be usable as a kind of gesture interface of some kind. That would be cool, although rings are such jewelry-oriented devices that you really, you know, who's gonna buy their jewelry from Google?
So are watches, though.
Well, yes, but they're, you know, I don't know. It's watches, the form factor for watches is, you know, you just kind of have to make it macho-looking, or you have to make it techie-looking, or you have to make it somewhat elegant or business-looking.
Not rings here in the 21st century. You know, you and I are 20th century guys, and we wore watches when we were younger, and some of them looked like crap. But now today, watches, it's either your phone or it's a really fine piece of jewelry.
So
I don't think there's much of a middle ground anymore.
All right. Well, we'll see what the devices are that come out. Killian, what's your best guess, or what information do you have about when all this will be coming out? The APIs, the watches, all of that.
Google said it's putting out its SDK this week, and Motorola, I think you said in the second quarter of this year, is gonna bring out Moto 360. But other than that, that's pretty much all we know about it right now.
All right. Well, thank you, Killian, for coming on at the very last minute. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, you can find Killian at cultofandroid.com, also cultofmac.com, and on Twitter at Killian Bell. That's KillianBell. Thanks again. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you about some new YouTube news, but first I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the fast and easy way to create a professional website or online portfolio. This site is really great to use, and if you have 5 minutes to check it out, I recommend that you do that. Building a website sounds like a big, daunting, difficult, painful task, but you can just go there, sign in, no credit card required, and check it out, and you can have a website up and running in no time at all, and you'll see how incredibly easy it is. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with, and they've recently added a logo creator tool. That's right, you can create your own professional-looking logo with their simple tool, and it looks like it was built by a designer, and that will be yours to trademark and to use for your small business. If you do have a small business where you want to sell things online, of course, Squarespace now supports e-commerce. And this is available for all subscription plans, and it includes the ability to accept donations. So it's not just for businesses. It's great for nonprofits, cash wedding registries, school fund drives, you name it. If you need to collect money, this is the place to do it, because Squarespace has e-commerce support built right in. It's mobile ready, and that means a number of things. One of them, the most important to me of which, is that when you build a website, of course, you're using your big screen, probably you're using a laptop to build a website, and then it looks great on the laptop, but then you open it up with an Android phone or an iPhone, and it looks really great on that too, because it's reformatted automatically on the fly for mobile devices, and that's super important because we live in an increasingly mobile world. It's also mobile ready from a sort of a blog, a master, a webmaster sort of perspective, because they have a new Squarespace metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media follows. So that is really, really fantastic. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off, and that will also show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of this show. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, a new YouTube for kids is in the works, according to an exclusive by The Information's Amir Afradi. The site will be devoid of adult or inappropriate content and will be aimed at kids 10 years and younger. Amir Afradi is a senior reporter for The Information and joins us. Welcome, Amir.
Thanks for having me.
Now, would this be a second site, a second YouTube, or would this be some kind of super filter that is like a better version of the current safety mode?
Well, the idea is that, you know, if you have a child, if you're a parent and you want to give that child some video content to occupy their time, you can pull up a tablet and, you know, hit a special YouTube app that will have just the stuff for them. I think that's the idea. There's a lot of stuff that's in flux here, and we kind of get into it all at theinformation.com. But really, the idea is to have kind of a walled off space that is child safe, child appropriate, and does not give that kid the opportunity to see the very inappropriate things that exist on the site today.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of an electronic babysitter, which sounds great when you're a harried parent. Now, would this simply be YouTube minus the twerking videos and the cussing? Or, I mean, are they going to go after content creators to actually create unique content for this? Is this almost like a TV channel for kids, or is this just YouTube minus a lot of the content?
Yeah, I mean, it's all the above. So there's a product element here, right? They have to create this product, and then they have to fill it with content. There is already a lot of really good stuff for kids on the site. It's obviously mixed in with a lot of other stuff. But yeah, they want to incentivize content creators to create videos for this product and try to monetize it in a way that makes sense. You know, when it comes to kids' content, sure, you know, there are advertisers that are very interested in targeting young kids. But, you know, what would be really interesting is if you could actually charge for this content in the same way that, you know, Netflix, right, has a kids section and they charge for their content. So I think that's something that a lot of the content creators that know the most about children's content are thinking very, very hard about. And obviously, YouTube as a platform does allow for paid subscriptions. And I think that's one of the things that's being looked at very, very seriously.
Hmm. Maybe we'll do a kids show for YouTube. Maybe Chad Johnson will do OMG SpongeBob or something like that. We'll look for that. Are these like solid plans, or is this just some idea? Do you have a sense of how real and how much intention they have to actually do this?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest priorities for YouTube this year. I'm not going to say it's the number one thing on their agenda, but it's definitely up there. And the kinds of things that might slow it down, you know, obviously YouTube is in a transitionary phase. They just got a new leader, Susan Wojcicki from Google. She was not the most popular choice. The fellow there named Shishir Mahotra, he was considered to be the heir apparent to succeed Salar Kamangar. He did not get the job. People don't expect him to stay. It's early, but people don't expect him to stay. And so some of these shifts could cause delay here. And as you saw, I think last week Twitter actually poached somebody from the Twitter ads product team. Yeah. So there are all sorts of things that are in flux here. But yeah, no, this is a serious endeavor. You know, there are lots of questions here about curation, right? YouTube has all this good stuff, and they really want the algorithm to be king. But the problem is if you sort of start to to segment and create kind of a kids specific product, you really have to make some decisions about, you know, what kind of content you promote, what kind of content goes in there. And those are some thorny problems for YouTube when it comes to curation.
Well, you mentioned Susan Wojcicki. She comes from the advertising side, and which raises the question of advertising to children under the age of 10. Do you think this is going to be an ad-supported site? And if it isn't, how are they going to monetize it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yes, YouTube is an ad platform. I don't think that's gonna change. But I think they want to have flexibility here because they don't know what's going to work, and so they're sort of working these questions out in part with the content creators who specialize in this sort of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they have relationships with companies like Disney already. And Disney has content on YouTube, and Disney, you know, would have a lot of ideas as to what exactly is going to work, whether it makes sense to charge for this content, charge for this product, or sell advertising against it. As you know, advertising has been very difficult for YouTube of late. I mean, you know, the site and the company is successful, right? It's huge, it's growing, massive scale. But the ad rates, particularly in the United States, are not going up. I mean, they've failed to raise those ad rates, even though they got more high-quality content onto the site. They actually paid $300 million in cash advances to content creators to put more good stuff on the site. And that's great, but it didn't work. So there are a lot of question marks about whether advertising for this sort of product is actually going to work.
Well, it's a great story, and I appreciate you coming on to share it with us.
Anytime.
All right, wonderful. You can find Amir's work on theinformation.com, and you can find him on Twitter at Amir, A-M-I-R. Well, speaking of Google, Google plans to kill its Google Voice phone service in the coming months, hopefully not mid-call. According to an exclusive by Seth Weintraub on 9 to 5 Mac, the plan is to move most Google Voice features and all users over to Google Hangouts. What do you think, Mitch? You and I both use Google Hangouts and Google Plus. Are you a Google Voice user?
Oh my gosh, yes. As a matter of fact, I think they did this because they found out I just got new business cards last week with my Google Voice number on it.
You can port that number over if you ever need to.
I mean, I've given a lot of thought to Google Voice just because I use it every day. I think it's kind of stuck in the last decade.
Yeah.
It's still this business model where you have a desk phone that's your primary phone and a mobile phone that you use when you have to. These days, my mobile phone is my primary phone. Instead of one number for life, I want to have several numbers for each of the roles that I fill in life. One number I can give out for work, another number I can give out to friends and family. So I'd really like to see, you know, it's fine that they're phasing out Google Voice as a standalone product, but I'd really like to see them give a lot of love to just the idea of making your phone smarter.
Yeah, that's a great point. One thing I hope they retain, which is a killer feature that people don't, in my opinion, appreciate sufficiently, which is that they will lie for you. If you block somebody on Google Voice and then that person calls you, they will get a fake message from that sounds like it's from the phone company saying this phone is no longer in service. Pretty astonishing. I like to be an honest person, but it's kind of nice to throw, you know, telemarketers and stuff at that message because they'll give up. Maybe they'll even cross you off a list somewhere. So, you know, that's kind of a wacky service. I use it all the time. I use it as my main phone, actually, and I'm pretty happy with it. But I'm also really happy with Google Plus, and I think that Hangouts, although it's currently, you know, conspicuously imperfect, has a lot of promise. And I hope that this is part of a kind of continuous improvement of Google Plus Hangouts. Mitch, do you have the sense that this is a reaction to WhatsApp, which announced phone integration coming this summer? I mean, it looks like the messaging apps, which Hangout is a competitor to, are all going to sort of get this voice over IP phone capability. Is this a reaction to them, do you think?
It's either a reaction to or part of the same trend. This is just the way the whole world is going.
Yeah.
Messaging apps that do voice over IP. I think one of the really interesting angles to this is the extent to which this kind of thing is more of a threat than it already is to the phone service providers.
Yeah.
Because these, what was called in the industry, over-the-top services, OTT, things like voice over IP, that's something that is a problem for phone companies. Because they don't have the revenue model for it. And it's one of the biggest challenges that the phone companies are facing.
Absolutely. They don't want to be dumb pipes because there's no money in it. So
yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on this, and it's an interesting development, especially for those of us who use both Google Voice and Google Hangouts. Well, speaking of the way the world is going, new Facebook technology can recognize human faces almost as well as people do. It's called Deepface. Their algorithm can identify a face with 97.25% accuracy. That's just 0.25 percentage point worse than people can recognize faces. So it's pretty astonishing. Mitch, does this do you fall in the camp of that this creeps you out, or is this something that sounds useful and awesome to you?
I think it sounds useful. I think it's potentially dangerous. I get increasingly frustrated when I hear journalists use the word creepy to describe something like this. It sort of makes me start grinding my teeth, because this stuff really is very useful, and it also has a lot of real dangers that need to be discussed. And that word creepy just kind of kills the discussion. It makes it all about a personal reaction rather than figuring out what the potential problems are and addressing them.
That's a good point. And I see that the word creepy and similar words are applied to technology where it's beyond control. It feels like it's beyond your control. And this is one of them. Who knows how people are going to use this technology? And by the way, it's really fascinating how it works. It takes a two-dimensional ordinary photograph, and then it simulates a three-dimensional view of that person's face and turns it so that it's kind of straightforward, and then matches it that way. And it does that to all of the pictures. And so it tries to do a one-to-one match in terms of the orientation of somebody's face, and that's how it approaches this kind of human-like recognition. It's probably how humans do it, too. When we see a face from the side, we probably, in our minds, imagine it from the front, from the other side, whatever, and that may be part of how we recognize faces. It's pretty fascinating technology. There's a Chinese site also, Mitch, called Face Plus Plus that claims similar abilities and similar recognition levels. That's used, speaking of creepy, for a pretty creepy purpose. The way that works on Face Plus Plus, which is a technology that's on a dating site called Jiawan.com, you upload a picture, and it can be a celebrity or somebody you snapped a picture of on the street. You upload it into the service, and it will find people who look like that person so that you can approach them for a date. So, ew, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, that should be called Pathetic Plus Plus.
Yes, that's right. But the technology itself is fascinating, and you can see all kinds of uses. For example, if somebody's abusing a picture of you, it'd be nice to be able to search the internet and find pictures of yourself and see if anybody's posted them without your permission or posted them in a context that you would like to be aware of. You can also imagine the law enforcement capabilities and counterterrorism capabilities. That's a controversial point in itself, because if they put this thing in Grand Central Station or in an airport or whatever, they're not just going to be scanning some people. They're going to be scanning everybody. And that is either creepy or a great way to stop crime and terrorism, depending on your perspective. It's certainly not something that people are going to be super comfortable with.
I think the scanning Grand Central model use case, you get into the scenario where you're scanning millions of faces of people passing through Grand Central, and then you're comparing that to a database of hundreds of millions of people in the world, and you're going to get a ton of false positives.
Yeah.
And the problem with that scenario is, look, if I get a false positive for somebody's picture at a party at the internet, a little bit of harm there, maybe not a lot. If you get a false positive that suggests an innocent person might be a terrorist, you can see that's a huge problem.
Yeah, it's a problem in the same way that the no-fly list is a problem. The vast majority of people on the no-fly list are not terrorists and completely innocent of any potential crime. So, but this is like, I think they'll have more confidence in this one, which is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, and other Google news, Google and Viacom kissed and made up today. The companies settled their long-running court battle over Viacom content on YouTube, which began with a $1 billion lawsuit way back in 2007 over copyrighted Viacom content like South Park and The Daily Show posted on YouTube between the years 2005 and 2008. Remember that Google had just purchased YouTube and it had only owned it for about a year when this lawsuit took place. And since as this case has been dragging on, Google and Viacom have been making deals together. They've been working together. So it's probably somewhat inevitable that this lawsuit will come about. And you know, they don't even seem to have any animosity between the companies, and they're working very closely on this. Did you even know that this lawsuit was still dragging on? I guess I had kind of thought that it had faded away or been settled long ago.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Abe Vigoda of lawsuits. You just wow, that's still alive. No disrespect to Mr. Vigoda. I was looking at Mike Masnick's analysis of this over at Tech Dirt prior to the show. He points out that this lawsuit has gone on for 7 years and Viacom has lost at every single turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those shareholders have got to be wondering why they let this go on long enough.
Exactly. And maybe it was a negotiating position. Maybe they're getting along so well because Viacom was able to sort of dangle this in front of them or something. Who knows? Who knows what goes on in these backroom deals? But it's nice that it's over. And now we can all move on and hold hands, sing Kumbaya, and live in peace and harmony for all time. Well, in a second, I'm going to tell you about the new information about Popcorn Time, which we reported on yesterday. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle is a company that will buy your used gadgets. And this is a very valuable thing because money is good. And if your gadgets are sitting around in a box or a drawer or in the garage or just lying around, they are not doing you any favors. They're just collecting dust and they are wasting money because if you sell these to Gazelle, Gazelle will pay you surprisingly good money for it. Now, if you're watching the video, you can see how this works. You just go to Gazelle, you pick a device. In this case, what do we have? We have an iPhone. This is an iPhone 5C. And nobody wants to buy your iPhone 5C except Gazelle. They will buy it and pay you $145 for this phone. That's a really great, great price for a very, very unpopular phone. For the popular phones, they'll give you a lot of money. They'll even buy, in many cases, broken iPhones and broken tablets. So you can check this out by going to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find your item, put in the condition of that item, and they give you a price. Now, that price is locked in for 30 days. That means that even if the value of this device declines over those 30 days, they'll still honor the price that they showed you when you went in initially. So that is a fantastic deal. They have paid more than $100 million to more than 700,000 customers, and I'm one of them. I've used it, and I was astonished at how much they paid me for my device, and it helped me fund my next device. And I really, really appreciate that. Most items qualify for a free box, super easy to use. So you've got to use Gazelle because I know you've got some gadgets lying around doing you no favors. So what is your Apple or Android device worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now because your device may lose value the longer you wait. Well, we told you yesterday about the creation, removal, then recreation of a service called Popcorn Time, which Burke tried last night, said it was awesome. And it kind of works like Netflix, but it gets its movies from BitTorrent. So a viewer named Jared wrote into us and said, quote, "I don't think Popcorn Time is illegal by any means, since all they're doing is getting content from torrenting sites anyway. Whichever way you look at it, movie studios will need to get this message. Even though it hurts content creators, this is the internet. They will need to work with it, not against it." And, you know, that's the central point there. I agree with 100%. The movie studios need to deal with reality. The reality is that people can just download movies. And if they don't give people the ability to watch what they want, when they want to watch it, people will give themselves that ability using services like this. And so, come on, get with it. Stop hitting us with artificial scarcity to jack up prices. It ain't going to work. It didn't work for music, and it's not going to work for movies going forward. Well, in a follow-up, we told you on previous episodes about Amazon's rumored video streaming box. The Wall Street Journal is now reporting that Amazon will ship this video streaming device in early April. The product will be sold through Amazon.com, of course, and also by Staples and Best Buy in the United States, according to the article. Well, Mitch, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's always refreshing to hear your thoughts on technology.
Thanks for having me. I always like listening to this show, and now I get to be on it.
Where can people find your work?
Well, you can find me on Light Reading, lightreading.com. And you can also see my Twitter handle. It's Mitch Wagner. I'm actually Mitch Wagner everywhere. Mitch Wagner on Twitter, Mitch Wagner on Google+, Facebook, and Tumblr. Pretty much the same stuff everywhere. But my professional stuff, my best stuff is saved for lightreading.com.
Great. You locked up the Mitch Wagner handle everywhere. Very impressive.
I did. I have a monopoly on that. The Justice Department will be investigating me.
They should. If you're watching this Justice Department, you can find him at Mitch Wagner. everywhere. Well, there's so many ways to subscribe to Tech News Today. One of them is by going to our site at twit.tv/TNT, and you can subscribe to either the audio version or the video version, whichever you prefer. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Tech News Today. You can subscribe to us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, at Tech News Today TV, or you can join our Google Plus community and also circle our page on Google Plus by searching for Tech News Today on Google Plus. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. You can also contact us and tell us what you're thinking and feeling by voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And make sure you don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, every weeknight at 4 p.m. Pacific. I thank you for joining us today. My name is Mike Elgin. We'll see you tomorrow.